Well, welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest is a pediatrician and researcher who, through her work, may have stumbled upon one of the biggest mysteries in human history. Well, maybe a little hyperbole, but maybe not. Childhood trauma has always been something that the psychological community has studied closely. We all have something in our past that we might be fighting against, but we know through hard work and perseverance that we can overcome our adversities. But what if those adversities weren't just mental? What if they were physical and they led to deteriorating health problems, strokes, and even cancer? What if our childhood traumas were rewriting our DNA? This is the basis for Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris's research, which is on display in the new book, The Deepest Well, Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity. The book sets out not only to look at the cause and effect of childhood trauma on human beings, but what we can do to heal. She spent her career educating people on this topic, and what was once a new controversial idea has turned into a medical movement. Dr. Burke-Harris is the founder and CEO of the Center for Youth Wellness in San Francisco, and she joins me now. Dr. Burke-Harris, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
It really is. Thinking about this, it's funny because I've heard of this before. I've heard of the concept of childhood adversity rewriting our DNA before, and it wasn't until I started reading the book that I'm like, oh, this is what she's talking about. This is great. This is something that really is becoming a movement.
That's right. Right. In fact, this is becoming much more widely known and understood. And this book is really about taking that knowledge and putting it into practice. So really, you know, advancing the standard of care that we have for pediatric medicine for children in the United States.
A lot of this area used to be for therapists and psychologists. It was really on the mental side. When you have childhood adversity, any trauma, it gets worked out in therapy. Talk about how you got to the point of it being beyond a mental thing and actually finding it manifested in physical.
Well, really, one of the big things that I saw was that, yes, I definitely had lots of patients who had childhood adversity, who had behavioral problems. But I also observed that a lot of my patients with some of the most challenging health problems also had significant histories of adversity. And for me, really the most eye-opening piece, I think, was, you know, reading about the impact of early adversity on our immune system.
Yeah, right.
Right? Now, it doesn't get much more medical than your immune system. And to think that when kids experience adversity, right, when we activate our stress response, that our stress response also activates our immune response. And high doses of adversity in childhood can actually change the way our immune systems function.
It's the first time I think I've actually researched and Googled toxic stress. Talk about toxic stress. There's three different types of stress, and they can be, there's good stress, but then there's bad stress, and then there's toxic stress.
Yeah, that's right. One of the things that I think is really important is that we recognize, and I love to say to folks, you know, your stress response was designed to save your life. The animals that did not evolve that, they're no longer here.
Right.
Right? So it's this normal and healthy part of human development, and the three types of stress response is the positive stress response. It's the one that, you know, gets us up and active and focused when we've got a big challenge in front of us, right? And that's brief increases in our stress hormones that return back to normal after the stressor has passed. Then there's tolerable stress, which could be associated with more significant challenges in life. And some of these challenges, I mean, they can be, you know, for example, the death of a loved one or a big move or something like that. But what we know is that with the appropriate buffering from safe, stable, and nurturing relationships, that although there's a more prolonged change in our stress hormones, then it comes back down to baseline.
Right. So the idea for both of those stresses, they come back to baseline.
That's right. That's right. But with toxic stress, what we see is a prolonged activation of the stress response. And particularly when kids are exposed to abuse or neglect or, you know, growing up with a caregiver who's mentally ill or substance dependent, what happens is that stress response is activated so often that it loses the ability to turn itself off normally. And so you have these long-term changes to the brain and bodies, the stress hormones, all of the chemicals that in our body, including our, you know, our inflammation, our, you know, the way that our immune system is turned on. And that can actually change the way kids' developing brains and bodies, the way it develops, the structure and function of kids' developing brains, their hormonal systems, their immune system, and even the way DNA is read and transcribed.
That's amazing to me. You talk about in the book one case that really is the case of one of your patients, Diego. And this story is the one that really seems to be the one that got you asking different questions, because Diego came in because he had asthma, eczema, maybe ADHD. That's what the parents wanted to look into. But what happened with Diego?
Yeah, so Diego was a 7-year-old boy who came in to see me, as you mentioned, because his teacher told his mom to bring him in to see me because she thought he had ADHD. And when I examined him, there were a couple things that I noticed. Number one was, as you mentioned, you know, in addition to behavioral problems, he had asthma, he had eczema, and he was really small. So even though this child was 7 years old, his height was the average for a 4-year-old. Hmm. And when I was doing the history to investigate and talking to mom, okay, so tell me when these behavioral problems started. You know, I'm going to take one problem at a time. His mom told me that they really began after a sexual assault that happened when he was 4 years old. And then when I went and I looked at his growth chart, and I also saw that he had not gained height, again, since he was 4 years old. And I started putting the pieces together. And when I called the endocrinologist, who is the hormone specialist, and I said, you know, have you ever seen this connection before of a child who could stop growing after a severe trauma? And she said, yes, absolutely.
It's stunning because as a pediatrician, I would assume that your job, when you talk about the physical traits, that's what you're doing. Because if there's a behavioral problem, at a certain point you go, all right, I'm going to prescribe you something, or I'm going to send you to a specialist, right?
That's right.
So a lot of times you can understand why maybe pediatricians or even doctors may not take the time to investigate with the behavioral side, because at a certain point they go, well, that's somebody else's area.
That's
so
right.
So it really does come down to asking different questions.
That's exactly how I was trained. I was trained, okay, if it's a social problem, you refer to a social worker. If it's a behavior problem, you know, you're referring to a mental health specialist. And never in my training, and you know, I did my residency at Stanford. Like, it was not not shabby training.
Right, absolutely.
But we never learned that what kids experience can dramatically affect their health. So it turns out that if a child has 4 or more adverse childhood experiences, their risk for asthma doubles.
Up to this point, asthma and other was always kind of connected to environmental factors, where people lived or poverty, inequality, things that in the shadows of industries, we have that here in Chicago. So this is a breakthrough in the sense that so many times researchers and doctors would say, well, this is connected to something else.
That's right. And I think that the reason why this is so important is because when we understand the mechanism, when we understand the underlying biological cause, then we can target that much more accurately.
Well, we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about the ACE test as well. The Deepest Well is the book. It's called The Deepest Well, Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity. Nadine Burke-Harris is the author, and she is in studio with me tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back more with Dr. Burke-Harris here at The Big Table. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris, her book, The Deepest Well, Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity. And we're talking about I feel like it's a way that we can change the way we look at our lives, our DNA, everything. This idea of what childhood adversity is and what it does to our bodies. Because before this, anytime any of us had childhood trauma of any form, it was worked out through therapy or psychology or a mental health specialist. Well, what you're talking about here is there a connection between childhood trauma and actual DNA and the physical growth of our bodies, and possibly, and there's many stories in this book as well, how that manifests itself when we get older and we find ourselves with long-term health problems at the age of 40, 50, 60 years old.
That's right.
All right, let's talk, how hard is it for you when coming across this material and continuing this research? Let's talk about that. And once you saw Diego and you started to find the connections, what's the next step? Is it convincing a medical community? Is it presenting to different places? What happens after Diego?
So after Diego, for me, it was really about understanding the mechanism, right? So understanding the biology of what happens. And in order to do that, even though I think I'm pretty awesome, we needed I needed a team because this is a lot of work. And so I created my center, the Center for Youth Wellness. And we have an amazing team of researchers and doctors and advocates and folks who are constantly scouring the literature to think about how do we put this science to work to create solutions, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the first things that we did was we developed a screening tool for every pediatrician to be able to screen for adverse childhood experiences. Because believe it or not, despite the fact that we are, you know, now in 2018 and the science, the original study by the CDC that documented this powerful connection is now two decades old, right? Still only 4% of pediatricians are actually routinely screening for adverse childhood experiences.
Why do you think that is? From your vantage point at the Center for Youth Wellness, why is the pediatrician community hesitating in connecting the dots on this?
There are lots of good reasons why reasonable people are not doing this, and that's what we're specifically trying to remove those barriers at the Center for Youth Wellness. So one is that folks haven't been trained on this. You know, as I said, in my training, I did not learn about this. I don't want every pediatrician to have to reinvent the wheel. I stayed up until 2 a.m. every night reading research articles, but I don't want everyone to have to do that, right? And so that's why my organization created something called the National Pediatric Practice Community on ACE screening. And we've created this online platform where any pediatrician in America can join and be part of learning, you know, how do we do this? And actually be part of finding solutions. Because for pediatricians who aren't screening, who want to share their reasons why they're not screening, right? Like join the practice community, tell us why you're not doing it. And then we together can learn about how do we reduce the obstacles and make this easier.
Does it come down to medical schools? At some point or another, will training have to be changed? And obviously, you talk about all sorts of different areas where we learn new things and it has to be implemented. But implementing it in a medical community, especially with curriculum, can be tough.
Yeah, so training has to be changed. But guess what? Nobody gets paid for doing this. Even if in our own center, we have to fundraise to be able to have our teams be able to do this groundbreaking work and, you know, help to figure out solutions for how pediatricians respond to this. So if you're a pediatrician, you've got 30 things that you've got to check at this visit, right? You get paid for 15 of them.
right. You're volunteering the rest of your time.
Exactly. So we need to change our policies. Insurance companies need to be paying for this. The government, which is, you know, one of the biggest payers that's out there, also needs to be reimbursing clinicians for their time.
But and as we see, even in modern time, it's going to be difficult to get the federal government to pay for anything. Their goal is to push it to states and move things more private sector. So do you see hope and optimism when it comes to being able to push this idea and put it into hands and have it fully funded and supported?
So, you know, I do have a lot of hope, and here's why. Because the power is in each one of us as advocates, right? So I'm going to say the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? Like if we shout it from the rooftops, if we get out there and demand that we are addressing this, because right now there are so many kids out there who are being misdiagnosed, who aren't getting the quality of care that they deserve, who aren't getting the best possible solutions that we can put forward, and they deserve to have better outcomes. Yeah. And they'll get that when we raise our voices.
Nadine Burke-Harris is the author of The Deepest Well, Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity. We're talking about how childhood trauma could be one of the reasons why we have physical problems, not just mental, but physical problems as we get older. One of the things I love about the book is that you continually tell the stories of patients and you change the names and you change, but there's stories that connect us and hook us. One is the first one you tell about Evan and why it's different than Diego. Diego is what, 8 years, 7 years old? Evan's 43 years old and at this point doesn't have any risk factors and seems to be fine, yet he suffers a stroke.
Yes. So Evan is a 43-year-old, or at the time I wrote the book, was a 43-year-old computer programmer, father of two, beautiful wife, beautiful kids, you know, loves to play basketball. And the reason I started the book with the story of Evan and this really, this health crisis that he had, this stroke that he had, where half of his body was paralyzed, is because for a person with four or more adverse childhood experiences, the risk of stroke is 2.5 times. And yet, what is your average? You know, when I go to the doctor, they don't ask me about my ACE score.
No, you're absolutely right.
They don't tell me what I can do to prevent it, and it's because most doctors today still aren't trained.
And the paramedics at the time, there's no risk factors. They don't know why. But the point of the whole story was they weren't aware of the risk factors because no one ever asked.
That's right. And as long as we have this lack of awareness, then it's this huge blind spot, and we can't be doing prevention, early intervention, and treatment, and that's what we need to be
doing. We're going to talk about that coming up here right after the news. I'm interested as well because one of the great things about the stories is, and one of the stories is a small story in the middle of the book about Marjorie. And I thought that that part, this was really about when you go and you give presentations to different medical facilities, communities, hospitals, other places. Marjorie worked there, and Marjorie came up to you before she left and essentially said, "This explains a lot. This explains me. I'm 10 out of 10. How often do you get that experience where you're talking, whether it be a TED Talk or somewhere else, where people are like, "You've done more for me in just this 10-minute talk than all of my doctors have done through my lifetime"?
So that's been a really amazing thing about being on this book tour in particular, is that I definitely get that all the time, but particular on this tour, where I think it's because of all of the information that's in the book, so many folks have come up to me and said, "Oh my goodness, you saved my life. You saved my life, or you saved my child's life, or you changed our lives, or, you know, thank you so much for the work that you do." And that is what keeps me going.
The author of the book, The Deepest Well, Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity, is in studio, Nadine Burke-Harris. She is a pediatrician, researcher, and the founder and CEO for the Center for Youth Wellness in San Francisco. We'll take a quick break here. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation with Dr. Burke-Harris. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here at 720 WGN. I am Justin Coffin. In studio with me, Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris. She's the author of The Deepest Well, Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity, and it's really a book about her research, which is tied childhood trauma to long-term physical health problems. And that could be anything from strokes to cancer to chronic pain, everything. And a lot of people may just say, "Well, I'm unlucky," or possibly, you know, this is what happens when you get old. You do talk a lot about risk factors in the book, but they recognize that I don't even know why this is happening to me. I don't have these risk factors, but there is something in our childhood adversity. Dr. Burke-Harris, I am tremendously interested in how this affects how physicians have to rethink the way they approach their patients. And so if what I'm hearing from you with the ACE test and the other places about examining and redefining what are risk factors, how does that start? Does that start with asking different questions, almost pushing and being outside the box thinker when it comes to medicine?
Well, I think it really starts by, number one, taking the science and the research that's out there and actually, applying it to practice, right? I mean, this is
a novel concept, right?
So, you know, our team at the Center for Youth Wellness looked at over 16,000 research articles when we, you know, pulled together all of this science. And the thing that I think is really powerful is that what the research tells us is a couple of things. Number one, it tells us that adversity in childhood has an outsized effect on our brains and bodies. It just, because kids are developing, it affects the brain structure and function, these different things. The second thing that it tells us is that, number one, relationships make a huge difference. Just as we can activate each other's stress response biologically, we also biologically have the capacity to buffer each other's stress response. And what that means is that what we're experiencing, our relationships, they make a difference. So those, you know, I know so many people who have either been in whether it's physically or even verbally violent relationships. And we think to ourselves like, oh, my kid didn't see that, or he was too young. And the science is showing us the opposite. The science is showing us, especially when kids are little, that they're particularly vulnerable. But the other thing that the science is showing us is that when we know what the fundamental problem is, an overactive stress response, right? Do you want to know how many adults are walking around right now with an overactive stress response? And they don't know.
Right.
And they no doctor has ever told them that there's a problem or that that is the problem. And the thing is, that's something that we can do something about.
Well, I wonder about it too, because as we've talked about identifying what the issues are, let's talk about what is possible for the treatment part of it, because the book is Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity. How important is just knowing that that could be the source of your toxic stress? That might be why you have chronic pain.
Yeah, that's really important, is recognizing, wait, my childhood adversity, has that affected my stress response? You know, how am I doing? Do I sometimes, you know, am I a little quick to anger, or do I get sick easily when I feel overwhelmed? And then when we look at some of the solutions and the interventions that I outline in the book, which is what the research is showing us are the most powerful tools that we have right now, things like getting regular exercise, right, to reduce our stress hormones, to reduce inflammation, to release healthy hormones like endorphins, all of these fight the stress hormones that come up in our bodies, right? It's not just like you heard exercise is good for you. It really biologically counters the effects.
Well, let's go to the DNA part. As children develop, and we're talking about early childhood trauma, there's a number there, right? It's like 3 to 6 or something in that.
No. It's 0 to 18.
It's 0 to 18.
Yeah.
There it is. Okay. See, we've moved on from my early research. All right. So 0 to 18, but it's reversible in the sense that if you can control it or understand it and be able to do the things you're talking about, it helps rewrite the DNA the other way? I mean, it's not something that necessarily is with you forever. It's not something that you're given a death sentence if you had a childhood trauma.
So that's right. In fact, so when you experience adversity in childhood, if you have that buffering from a caregiver, if you have that stable relationship, this is awesome research. See, I'm such a science nerd that when I see really cool research, I totally geek out on it. But they did this research at McGill University with rats. And what they did was they took the rat pups and they stressed them out, right? And then they gave them back to their moms. And some moms did lots of licking and grooming, which is like the human equivalent of hugs and kisses and all that kind of stuff. And what they found was that those pups did better on cognitive tests. They actually had a healthier stress response that turned itself off more normally. And what they found was changes in those rats' genetic markers, something called epigenetic regulation. But here's the crazy part. So some moms did that a lot. They were high lickers, and some moms didn't do it so much. They were low lickers. And when they took the rat pups at birth and switched them, what they found was that the rats that were raised by the high licker moms, even though genetically they were from moms who didn't do a lot of licking, they, again, perform better on tests. They had a more healthy stress response. And what they found was that their DNA markers, their epigenetic regulation, was actually changed by the mom's behavior. It wasn't their actual genetic code. It was the behavior that the mom did for them that changed the markers on their DNA.
It seems to me to be a correlation, or at least a parallel, to how we see any other development markers. When we talk about, well, you always hear one of the reasons that you don't want to have kids taking substances or alcohol or anything, it's stunted growth.
Yeah.
This concept has the ability to fit into that category. This idea of too much toxic stress, or the idea of prolonged toxic stress, is as bad as drugs or alcohol and things of that nature when it comes to stunting the growth of the human body.
Absolutely. In fact, childhood adversity is a neurotoxin. Right? Like, it's not a coincidence that this condition is called toxic stress, because it truly is a neurotoxin. Yeah.
as we go back to the questions I asked right at the beginning, just about the medical community, as this becomes more studies are done and more research, and it becomes a encrusted permanent type of research. It's not something that, you know, is off in the cubicle at the mall. You're like, hey, I've got this is you know, there's a lot that is on this from the ACE test, the CDC studies, and everything in between. What's the best way to get people involved? Is it the idea of maybe saying, like we just did, that toxic stress is something as bad as drugs and alcohol and should be maybe put in that category, so it sits in that category? Is it training with first-year medical students when they come in and understanding what it is? What's the best way for us to all understand that this is going to be a part of our future?
Honestly, I think the best way to make this part of our future, sadly, is to get it paid for. I mean, that's really the sad thing. And I think that for our policymakers, I mean, this is public health 101. When we told everyone, you know, it's a really good idea to wear your seatbelt, you're less likely to die if you wear your seatbelt, all those things, a small percentage of people wore their seatbelt. But when we said, click it or tick it, then everyone began wearing their seatbelts. It's about policy change. And it's the same thing. Everyone knew for a really long time that smoking caused cancer. But when you couldn't smoke in bars, and you couldn't smoke in restaurants, or you couldn't smoke on airplanes anymore, and then all of a sudden, you know, we started seeing these way lower rates of smoking. And it's not just about knowing the information. We have to put that knowledge to action in the form of policy.
Is there a way, barring any changes in federal policy or state policy when it comes to this stuff, because that's hard to move, is there a way to do what you're doing with the book and the TED Talks and everything else to go around the government and get right to people to have a better education of what toxic stress is and the concept that this is affecting, like drugs and alcohol, your children?
I'm so glad you asked that question, because our center actually just launched a website called stresshealth.org, stress-health.org. And that is a site that folks can go on. They can take the ACE test for themselves. Yeah. They can find out what they can do for themselves, for their kids, and learn more about toxic stress. And it's also a way for us to also build a movement and get folks involved, because that's what this is about. Even if it's about just every person going to your doctor and saying, hey, have you heard of adverse childhood experiences? Are you screening for it? If you're not, would you be willing to learn more?
Or here's my score.
Right? Or exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and if they knew what that meant, if you said, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't have any history, but I've got a 9 on my ACE test, then they'd say, oh, okay, well, that's going to be a problem.
Exactly. And what that means is, if I have a 9 on my ACE test, okay, and here's what I need to do differently for your care.
Right.
Right? So maybe I need to be doing, you know,
a higher diet.
Diabetes Absolutely. Earlier or something like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Exactly.
I think that right there might be a way to affect change, just having that vernacular, the idea of the ACE test and people knowing what your score is, just like you, at some point we all cared about IQ. I don't know if we care anymore, but the idea being that is something we all know and have in our, medical toolbox. Nadine Burke Harris is the author of The Deepest Well, Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity. She's also the founder and CEO for the Center for Youth Wellness in San Francisco. Dr. Burke Harris, thanks for joining us, and I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.